Welcome to the Flying Solo Podcast. I am your host, Katie Kangas, and each week on the show, we will talk about how to take flight and follow your dreams as a solopreneur architect. In this episode, I'm joined by Ashley Mittling, founder of Mittling Design Plus Architecture, a Twin Cities-based residential practice focused on renovations and additions. Ashley works with homeowners who love their neighborhood and home, but feel the growing pains of changes in their family or circumstances. Something in their home is getting in the way of living their best lives. Ashley started her own practice after working in design build. She understands the complexity of renovating existing spaces. She works with care to honor each client's unique needs. Then she designs with surgical precision to do more with the constraints of an existing home. Ashley's practice reminds me of a house wren. Wrens are masters of tight spaces. They nest inside existing spaces that are awkward corners, unused gaps, and vacated nooks. Through thoughtful and efficient moves, they transform these overlooked spaces into their own small havens. When mating, a male wren will make several nests and allow the female to choose her favorite. Ashley uses that same approach with her residential clients. Whether it is choosing from schematic design options or interviewing contractors, Ashley works with her clients to find the right fit for their renovations and additions. She designs within the tight spaces so clients can fully nest inside their homes. This means accommodating modern living within the original character of a home, making careful, intentional moves that support her clients through each stage of their lives. Because sometimes the best design isn't making the house bigger, it's shaping space around the natural flow of our lives. Welcome to the Flying Solo Podcast. I am your host, Katie Kangas, and today I am meeting with Ashley Mittling, who has founded Mittling, Mittling Design and Architecture.
Plus Architecture.
Plus. I love the plus. We got to get our math in there. That's our architectural roots. We all came into it because we love math, right?
Yeah. Totally.
Well, welcome, Ashley. So glad you can join me here. And can you tell us a little bit about your practice?
Yeah, thanks for having me. This is exciting. I started this practice about 11 years ago. So I have been I grew up in Nebraska, so I moved up here right after grad school. I liked that Minneapolis was a lot more progressive than Nebraska. The Wiseman had just been built, and I was like, I want to live somewhere where that can happen.
East or West Nebraska, or middle?
East. Okay. Lincoln is probably the closest big city.
Cool.
But yeah, I went to the University of Nebraska. So I had some friends here that went to MCAD. And so I always loved the cities. The practice I'm in now, Mittling Design Plus Architecture, is something my husband started as Mittling Design because he did cabinet design and wanted to do that for various different architects and designers and furniture and stuff. So he started that, and I was at a design build company. I have been at two different design build companies prior to that, traditional architecture, commercial practice, also residential practices in the cities. And at the time, my husband was like, I don't think you're going to be happy unless you do your own thing. And I was like, yeah, I know, you're right. So I joined him, and then within a year, he was off doing something else, product design. And I'm like, I'm running with this, which is really great because I am not a risk taker naturally. So, you know, once you jump into something, you're like, well, I'm going to see how this goes. So, so then I added the plus architecture and that kind of stuck. And so then here we are like 11 years later, I have one full-time employee, almost a second to join us here mid-February. And my employee, Katie Lakin, has been with me for about 7 years. So we worked together briefly at one of those design build firms. And she was between bachelor's and master's. And I was just like, she's into this. You know, we stayed in touch. So, and then I just have been really leaning into residential remodels and additions. I would say I just really love to knit that architectural neighborhood fabric together. And I really love to help clients just kind of lead their best lives. A lot of the homes we work on, obviously, they were designed for one person, mostly a woman, trapped in the kitchen. So there's a whole like underlying of liberation to what we do, which I really love. So that's a snapshot for now.
I love that. So liberated from the labor to being celebrated.
Yes. Let's have our family lives.
Absolutely.
With each other.
Yes. You talked about that design build, and I'm hearing a lot about like how you're very tactile and how did that really shape how you approach architecture?
Yeah, that taught me so much. I mean, not only was I in the two different firms I had been at, one for 3 years, one for two, I was brought in when they hadn't had an architect before. So it was kind of like new territory. And I loved that they were interested in bringing that level of design. I think from a sales tactic probably, but also just let me really get into it. And what I loved about not only the collaboration, but also like being on site, like you go on site, make a decision, and it happens within 5 minutes while you're there. I'm not going back and drawing it, which was just terrifying, but also very satisfying. And I think we often get along with builders very well because Katie and I both have that experience. And so I know the Katies are going to...
It's all good.
The Katies are getting their due today.
No, you're just surrounded by the Katies.
My middle name is Catherine, so I identify a little bit.
I love it. There's so many in our profession. So.
Yeah, but I really loved it. I mean, I just feel like design build can work if everybody's on the same page, but ultimately... The clients I have started to work with or continue to work with, they're all very unique and may not need that particular machine. So it's nice to be able to match make after we've done a little bit of design and say, you know, I think you'd work good with this contractor or this contractor, both from a scope point of view, from logistics, from mostly personality test.
Absolutely. Because if you can find someone you can work with, you know, they're often my clients in Minnesota, we're very practical about like, what's the cheapest option? Where are the finances? But when you can find someone you can work with, usually the finances kind of flex and work themselves out within reason. Yeah,
that's true. Yep.
So you kind of brought yourself into your husband's firm. So maybe you didn't ideate the whole business process before you stepped into it. And, and risk is like a huge thing that holds people back from starting their own business.
Yeah.
But I'm curious, over the last 11 years, you've had a chance to shape your business around yourself. So what kind of strengths and hopes and dreams have you fit into your business?
Well, I think I'm a mom. My daughter's going to college later this year. So if I start bursting into tears, that's why. You know, I think it's been nice that, you know, when you work for a more traditional firm, it's always, I know people have coined this phrase, your butt in the seat. You know, and so I would always, you know, I'd be dropping off my daughter at daycare and I would get the grief about, well, you weren't here at 8:30. And I'm like, I know. You're right. And, you know, so I always had tried to say, okay, I'm going to work 35 hours a week. You know, just I need a little grace to pick up and drop off. But I feel like for a lot of parents, I don't want to say moms in particular, because we hopefully are all sharing this load. you know, you need to, when I get to work, when I'm allowed to work, I'm very efficient and I love it. It fills me up. And so I feel like just that coordination and flexibility just helps us be better humans.
I felt the same way.
So it's not about having your butt in the seat. It's about like, you know, I was thinking about this at 2 a.m. I'm not going to charge you for that, but my brain is solving this. So anyway, we could go into the whole hourly versus fee-based too.
And value-based and everything. Yeah, no, I felt very similar when I first became a parent. And
yeah,
I love my kid, but like from pickup to bedtime were the worst 3 hours of my day because I had practiced being an architect for years. I was pretty good at it. But parenting was new and it's so much.
Yeah.
And learning the rhythms and learning the schedules, it was a release. It was so much easier to just go to work and deal with adults. And
I know. I always say it's parenting. You never know if the job, if you finish the job, if you did a good job, maybe when you're 30 or when they're 30 or something. But with architecture, it's like, oh, I did that. I can see the drawing. I did this. Mm-hmm. So
yeah,
it's a good balance maybe. I also think maybe you thought this too, like, oh, I was in grad school. I've stayed up plenty of nights. I can do this baby thing. No, you never get to sleep again. You never get the recovery day. So
I have a 4 month old right now. So yes.
Oh gosh.
There's some late nights. Yep.
You're in the trenches.
I am.
Yeah.
Yep. But we've learned a rhythm here too. So
yeah,
that's going pretty good. But yeah, I can't imagine it without setting my own hours or trying to explain myself to someone else. It's a different level to be explaining your life to someone else. So it's so freeing to be able to set your own boundaries and build your own business. So with Mittling Design Plus Architecture, what are three words that describe your firm and its unique approach?
Yeah, I try to narrow it down. So I would say care, honor, and surgical. So care is the whole like nurture clients, like, because they're having those same lives we are. They're up all night long and trying to complete a breakfast task. And then honor, I just think honoring the character of each home. And I think that's why we like to work the way we do. Different styles, different ages of home. I really love to like make sure your home still fits into your neighborhood and the community and the bigger picture. And then surgical because, and maybe precision's a better one, but I think surgical is feels like the way our design approach is as far as, hey, if we do just these couple little things, those are expensive square footage things, but they make everything work. So I feel like, you know, we measure the house very particularly, and you know, if 1 inch works to make the stair work, we're going to take it. So there's some of that that I think we just really try to eke out every little square inch.
I love that word though, because it reminds me of actual open heart surgery where they go in and they make just the little adjustments. No amount of bandages or surface dressing outside of your body is going to fix that.
Yeah.
Issue at the center of your being. And so
that's good.
You're able to go in and actually make that change. Wow. It just can energize the whole project. That's cool.
Yeah.
Very fun. So you've mentioned serving residential clients and that can be a huge range. That can be anywhere from small additions to multi-million dollar homes. Mm-hmm. Specifically, you said renovations and additions, but is there even more of a filter for who you really love to work with?
Typically, I would say they're people that have lived in their home a while and they're trying to grow into their home. So let's say, oh, we bought this when we were single or, you know, we were newly married and now we have three children and they're growing and we love the neighborhood. We love our neighbors. We've put down roots here. And I usually say as homework to a client, well, go look at other homes. You know, I mean, this is an investment in where you're at. And sometimes it can be more than buying a new home, but typically people come back to, nope, this is where we are. We want to stay here. And so I'd say, yeah, that's kind of our niche. And it's almost like we're trying to do less than more. Not only is construction expensive, but often this is a home that is already within a neighborhood context and it's got setback requirements and percentage of coverage of building requirements. You know, so we're really just trying to be surgical about it. And I'd say a lot of our clients, it feels like they're couples and families that want to stay here for a long time. Like maybe now they're just trying to figure out where the teen wants to have their own room somewhere not close to the kitchen or something. Or we're also looking at aging in place. Like somebody's going to need a knee replacement and you're going to want to have a bathroom on the main floor. So that kind of thing. Like we're just trying to like make it flexible and make it, make them able to stay there forever.
And that shows investment. It shows they understand value of their built environment. And that's inherent in asking these questions and wanting to live better in that place. To me, it almost sounds like you're dealing with houses in their teenage years.
Oh, yeah.
Where they're in that awkward adolescence and like, they're not new. They're pretty, they're going, they think they know what they want, but you know, they're just, they've got to make it over this really awkward threshold to really come into their own.
I love that. Cause you, and you don't want to prescribe their route.
This is true.
You know,
it's not going to fit. Like, yeah.
Keep it open.
Yeah. There's only so much tough love you can give. You've got to encourage them to do it themselves.
Yeah.
Yep.
Oh, I love that. It's funny because I kind of feel like as a firm, we're at the teen years too. Like, okay, I've got to write this process down. And, you know.
Especially as you're about to grow a bit more. Yes, that's so exciting though.
Yeah.
It just takes extra energy.
Yeah.
So how do you find your clients and people who buy into your mission and recognize your value?
Yeah. I get, you know, a lot of times it is word of mouth. I think like the first client I had to start Mittling Design was a client I knew, and we did some pre-design work at a firm I was at one before the one I was leaving. And they were, he was doing a totally different project now, but we, you know, had a spark and felt like we're on the same page. So he kind of helped me. It made me feel like I could do this with one client. And I think most clients, they find us through word of mouth. We do have good relationship with builders and other professionals. So builders often are like, they'll meet with somebody and say, well, you need to meet an architect first. And I'm always very happy when they send my name along. So then we kind of, it's kind of that back and forth, like we're in with a client, but they already know a contractor. So we can, you know, that relationship works throughout the process. And you know, we've been working with more interior designers. We are at International Market Square now. And so a lot of our, you know, neighbors in the building are interior designers. So that's been a really cool relationship too.
Can you describe that?
Yeah.
For those not in Minnesota, International Market Square is an incredible building.
Yeah.
And it's just filled. Like,
yeah, it, I guess they're back to pre-COVID occupancy, which is good, you know, so it's mostly a center for, you know, finding your selections like carpet and tile, and tons of interior designers are there. There's an art resources gallery is there. So, and it's a adaptive reuse building. So it used to be, I can't think of the name, but it did manufacturing of clothing.
Okay.
Undergarments, I believe. And so they did this whole cool atrium over this giant brick building. It's just gorgeous.
So the building itself is inherently beautiful and it attracts all of these design businesses. And these are like the high design. Like if you want the best hardware, you want the best cabinets, you want the best.
Yeah.
Everything is in there. The carpet, the laminates, the.
Yes.
Do they have furniture.
Yeah.
And it also has a couple of architecture firms that just fit right in.
Yeah. It's been great. And when we moved there, it's been about 2 years now. I thought, oh, is this too bougie for us? You know, I just came in from the job site. But, you know, they're tolerating us, you know. And we've actually, I'm like, oh, you know, everyone's just people. We still are all on the same page. We love good design. We love to, like, make clients happy. So it's been working. And the interior designers we've worked with have been great. Like, we are, you know, we're a small firm, but we still have realized that we have enough work that it's probably best if we partner with interior designers so that they can, you know, they have a pulse on where to get what tile and what to do. And also they can take it further. Like I've never gone into furniture or drapery It's not my wheelhouse. I've not been trained on any textiles at all. You know, as architects, we're like, oh, we like this very square couch. Of course, you know, so I like that they can bring another layer. And even after we're done, like maybe the client is like, okay, now I'm ready to get that dining room table and they can work with them on it. So that's been a great relationship.
I'm curious how your projects, if you do have a singular process, because you've talked about two different ways that you work with clients, you start a design and then you're ready to go and find the contractor that fits that design. That's more the traditional bid process. But you also get these clients from contractors who are then along for the ride. Is the design segmenting or the steps that you do with the client feel different for them?
You know, I feel like we've tried to work, well, we kind of have a typical five-step process. We do programming and schematic design. Once we get to schematic design, we call it, you know, the schematic design resolution plan. And then what we do at that point is get a, like a schematic estimate. And typically, like, let's say that a contractor brought us in, we will ask them for the estimate. We will ask them to give us like pie in the sky. I mean, they're literally just looking at a plan. There are no materials. They've seen the house. And most of the times the contractors we've worked with have worked with us before. So they kind of know that cost-wise, we're going to be kind of middle to upper tier of quality and selections. And so we get that estimate. You know, some people call it a ballpark. It's, you know, is it maybe 20% close? I mean, within 20% of what the actual will be, because then that just informs us how we're going to keep going with design. But when the client meets that person for that estimate, it might be a match. It might be like they already know them and let's go forward. Some clients are just very comfortable with that. Some really want the three bid process. And we allow that to happen, but we wait till later, till we've developed everything so they can actually see apples to apples each contractor. And I think the tricky part is contractors are busy. They don't really have to do that. You know, they maybe already have some projects that are ready. And so what we've tried to pivot to is, okay, let's meet three contractors. They don't have to give you a bid, and then see who fits. And the other thing is, because we're bringing these contractors to the table, they're all at a particular level, a level we're comfortable working with, and we trust them. Sometimes we'll go through this process, the bidding process, and they're $2,000 apart. And you're like, well, that wasn't worth it. I mean, it was to say everybody's of a good caliber. Nobody missed anything crazy, but ultimately it's who do you want in your house? Who can you communicate with for 6 months, you know, so.
And it's a tough 6 months. This isn't just a, hey, nice to meet you. These are, this is someone you meet and then you're in the trenches with them, getting through the messy part of the project where all the mistake, like everything you didn't know about bearing walls or hidden tie rods or anything. You've got to deal with it.
Yeah.
So how do you facilitate that conversation? What questions do you encourage clients to ask when they're doing these interviews?
One is, who's going to be on the job site? Who is my day-to-day contact? How often are we meeting? And a lot of times, the clients are in their home.
Yeah.
They want to stay in their home for this. And of course, then that's really like, okay, we're going to do a walkthrough with your contractor and say, okay, where is the zipper wall? And where's the dust coming out and in? It's not ideal, but sometimes if we can set up a temporary kitchen and they're down with it, I think a lot of clients would be like, yeah, I probably wouldn't do it that way again. But, you know, whatever works.
It's the open heart surgery. You don't want to do it twice. You just
don't
want to
be awake for that.
Yeah, this is true. That's right. Having the contractor in there with you is like being awake in the surgery.
More anesthesia, please. Yeah.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
So how are you meeting contractors and getting good quality? It's so hard to get started in this space and just call people up or just I don't know, do you welcome yourself to a job site? That's not necessarily the best way to meet a sub, but how are you cultivating these relationships?
Well, a couple of contractors are ones that, you know, I worked with at a previous firm who were like at a design build who were a carpenter, and now they have their own firm. So we're kind of like in the teen years together.
Yes, that's interesting.
Yeah. So that's, you know, personality wise, like we click and we can talk to each other. Others are, hey, we met them because a client worked with them before and liked them. And we have learned our lesson on this, though. We definitely go see what that work's like, talk to past clients, do all that. Because, you know, sometimes you'll get somebody you haven't worked with and you can't just rely on that they're going to do what they say they're going to do. So I think it's just been years of doing that.
And you've built up this Rolodex, if people remember those, of contacts.
Yeah.
But sometimes people shift and change, or they get busy, or they shift to a different type of work. How are you keeping those relationships? Do you have check-ins, or does that just happen naturally?
It just happens naturally, it seems like. And, you know, I wouldn't say we have a depth of contractors. Like I think we have maybe six that we're our go-tos. And, you know, I'd love to have 12, and we're always meeting people and saying, hey, would this be a good fit? Or we'll ask the contractor, you know, we'll do like a lunch or something and say, okay, what's your favorite location? What's your favorite style? What's your favorite scope? You know, all that stuff. So
that's great.
It is just a matchmaking, I guess.
It is, but you're asking questions that encourage them to identify who's their ideal client, and you're hoping that you can help be that matchmaker in that and just keep everyone moving in the same direction with the same goals. Because there's going to be clients who cost is going to be the ultimate deal breaker, and there's going to be contractors who align with that.
Yeah.
Whereas other contractors, it's they'll do whatever it takes to get. I know a contractor who spent a whole day aligning cabinet doors, making sure everything was just perfect.
And yes,
it didn't matter. It mattered to him that it had to be done.
Yes, that's what you want. Because especially clients' homes, they're going to stare at this and work on it every day. And I always say, even with like, I think contractors too that we work with best are ones that aren't afraid of us coming on the job site. And I also, I totally respect what they do. I am not going to try to schedule your subs. I am not going to tell you how to frame that wall. And I love it when a contractor calls and says, you know, that outlet or that switch that you wanted right there, it has to be over 2 inches to this side. I'm like, oh, well, no, can we go this side? 2 inches? Great. Phone call done.
Yes.
You know, I love that. I love that like quick instant. And that might not even be a conversation with a client. But if that switch is in the wrong place and the client walks by that every day and it drives them nuts and they don't even understand why, then we've failed. So, you know, that's the kind of thing I want the contractor to be attuned to.
I love hearing that. Yeah. And it's a different way of working. It's proactive. It's anticipating what people will care about in the end. And that's hard to know.
Yeah.
It takes a lot of connections, and that underlying relationship is really helpful for that. Well, can I share a bird with you?
Yeah.
I believe you're a house wren.
Ooh, awesome.
A house wren, they're fun. They fit into small spaces. And it actually reminds me of you nesting into your husband's firm at the very start. They will fit into the tight spaces of houses or barns or anywhere else. So it's a communal aspect as well. They're not out in the woods. They are fitting themselves in.
Neat.
Like your firm fits into International Market Square. It's just one little one little bit and there you are.
Neat.
But they also have this process of a male wren will make a bunch of nests, and then it will offer them to a mate, and the mate will choose from which nest they like. And that really reminds me of your process of
that is adorable.
are all the contractors? Who do you fit best with? Or even that initial design process where you present those options to your client mm-hmm. and they have mm-hmm. to pick which way to go with something. But it is very focused on efficiency and the image of the additions and renovations that you're doing. You're fitting in those tight spaces.
Love that.
And you're understanding how those rooms feel and how they're used. And it's choosing practicality and creativity over just ornament. Mm-hmm. So it's very functional and fitting in. So that's what comes to mind with your business and with your practice.
That is great.
Very fun.
I love birds. We've been total geeks feeding woodpeckers, getting a particular woodpecker, you know, feeder that has a tail, you know, like we kind of been getting into it. So
I didn't grow up like birding. Actually, I grew up in South Dakota, so there were not many birds there. Maybe it's the same in Nebraska, but the plains are just kind of like...
less trees.
They're dry and there's not much food. So yeah, there's right. not much bird life. Here in Minnesota, it's just flourishing and there's just such variety. Mm-hmm. And I never realized how many National Geographics I read as a kid, but I just like this marketing thing came up and I started thinking of birds and was
That's
like,
great.
Huh. I remember these birds from something, a lot of science in my childhood I didn't remember about, but it's fun.
Love it.
It's been a fun way to remember business because
yeah,
as architects, we're just kind of figuring out the business as we go along.
Yep. I love that. I'm going to totally research the house friend.
It's a lovely little bird. Cool. Well, you have your own full-time staff that you have trained. If you're thinking back to someone who's wanting to start their own business, mm-hmm. maybe they're like you, it's too risky. Mm-hmm. Why would you ever go out on your own? Why would you ever try this? What would you say to yourself back then? Or what would you say to someone facing that decision now?
I guess for me, I realized I did the strengths finder.
Yeah.
You know, that thing. And mm-hmm. my number one was learner. And I blame my parents because they're both teachers. But as architects too, like you're always going to learn the next thing. Like you're selling your services that you don't know what that design is yet.
That's so true.
But you know how to get there. You know what to put together. And so I feel like that's kind of, as a business is too, it's just like, it's another project you're going to figure out. So that feel, I mean, I guess that's how I take it instead of getting super paralyzed and freaked out. it's like, you know, you always come up with a design. Mm-hmm. You always do. You always come up with eight and you show them three, you know, so.
It's a balance of that hunger and trusting a process.
Yeah.
That you don't know what's going to come from. Because yeah, when we first meet clients, we don't know the solution. We're not meeting with them the first day saying, yeah, I'm going to fix your home
right.
for you in this way. It's no, I have to learn about you. I need to learn about your space.
Right.
And learn the structure and see what's possible.
Yeah. So I wanted to be an architect since I was 12.
Oh, really?
So I never deviated from that. I am a weird kid, but I just was like, that's what I'm going to do, whatever form this is.
What locked you into that at 12?
I think it's because, my mom took my brother and I traveling a lot. My dad was more the stay-at-home, have the hobby farm guy. And so we went to Chicago, and I remember realizing that when you're in a downtown, even like the spaces between the skyscrapers make you feel a certain way. So I think it was that spaces between thing. I was like, oh, is that what this is? And I would do really funny things in my room. Like they put I had shelves. And so I would make like homes in the shelves.
But
yeah, so
coming
funny.
From Nebraska, where everything is horizontal, broad, and then being put in that city where the planes are vertical.
Yes.
And compressed. Yeah. What a startling change to your sense of space.
Was so cool. Yeah. And just that the things that are around you make you feel a certain way, not those things, the space between.
Ooh.
Yeah. And then also my I was for my first house with my, you know, that I was born into was like a four square, beautiful brick 30s house in Lincoln. And then my parents moved when I was probably five. We moved out to the country, 3 acres, crazy split level house, totally different style, no trees. But my dad, very connected with the land, you know, was like, I remember I was thinking I'm a teens and I went, oh, you mean you planted these evergreens on the north side on purpose and your garden's on the south, you know, like, and they put a new window in my room on the east. It was one of those houses that had no windows on one entire side. And so when I got that window versus I had the north window and the east, I was like, what?
I can wake up in the morning.
Sun? So it was really funny that, like, you know, my dad very quietly is doing all these things. And I, what? Oh, wait. He knew what he was doing.
Well, what a testament to how people feel in their spaces. Mm-hmm. No matter, like, there's that thing like, oh, I'm not an architect, but you are aware of your spaces. And before recent millennia, everyone was building their own houses. Even now, people change things themselves, but we're able to help them go that extra level. And I'm really loving that word surgical because it can be that precise.
Yeah.
Well, cool. Hey, what did your parents teach?
My dad was like a calculus teacher. And my dad's retired. My mom's passed now, but she was a mostly dyslexia specialist. She really took kids on the margins that were super smart that nobody knew how to connect with. I think that was really maybe that human connection, whereas like you can read people more than the face value. I think the art and science, my mom was very artsy as well. She did watercolor. And so I think what I liked about architecture is that it's like that combining of art and science. It's like proving the art. I love that. You know, like, oh, I'm not just being frivolous. I'm proving that this can work and it can be beautiful, but it's also like a math equation or geometry coming together, you know, so. Mm-hmm. I feel like they designed me like that.
I love it. My parents were switched. My dad was a florist.
Oh, cool.
And my mom's the math teacher and the math coach. So similar.
Maybe there's something to that.
Right. And traveling at the age of 12. Huh.
Yeah. Yeah. We went to DC when I was a teen as well. And I got to see the Vietnam Memorial and Maya Lin. I was like, wait, there's a woman that does this? You know, so that really sparked me too.
Well, and I love monuments. There's so much thought put into each of those. I've only been to DC once, but walking each of those, I was just by myself. So it's just like, I'm just going to nerd out. I'm just going to experience this and go at my pace. Yeah, that was one of those like 20,000 step days.
I bet. And that the V is just so amazing because it's so simple, but so powerful. And I feel like that's kind of maybe as architects, what we're trying to get to. Like maybe at the end, it seems so simple and people take it for granted, but it moves you. I mean, and even I had an uncle that passed in Vietnam. And so I never met him, but it was like the generational feelings of that. Just, I get goosebumps just thinking about being there.
And it reminds me of something you said at the beginning, that Vietnam Memorial matters in context.
Yes.
That it's what you're experiencing as you approach it, mm-hmm. the super loud memorial with all the fountains.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's at one angle. And then the other angle is the Lincoln Memorial, which has its own amazingness. But at times you can see the reflections of these other memorials and it's just tucked back and away and it's quiet. And so
yeah,
it's so different and it seems so simple, but there's so much detail in that. And actually, I want to go back to one thing you talked about at the beginning about context. Mm-hmm. And I'm curious how that conversation goes with homeowners. You're saying they want to stay in the home and change it because they love their neighborhood. Mm-hmm. So maybe that makes the process easier. But I'm curious if you ever have trouble communicating that, yes, I know you want to do this, but There's this other context that how do you balance what their home is in the neighborhood and what they mean to the neighborhood versus what their needs are within their home? Because they're only obliged to change their own home as much as they want. So right. How do you navigate that awareness and that consideration?
Yeah, I think what to ask, to make sure I'm understanding, like a lot of times the first option we'll try to show them is one where we do the least amount of construction. And then there are these rules to follow in particular, like don't move stairs, don't move plumbing. Sometimes you move the plumbing and it all works. And so it might feel scary to them to do such a drastic thing. Or a lot of times a client will come and say, we just need this extra room. But you have to dig deeper and go, why do you need that extra room? What is that extra room? And by adding that, we're blocking off your sun. We're changing the whole circulation path. It's a dead end. You can't see out from this room then, you know, so I feel like it's our job to like poke a little more about, not that you need this room, but, oh, you want, you know, your son Jack to go study in this quiet space. But he doesn't want to be alone. He just wants a quiet space. So maybe it's a niche off of the kitchen, you know, like, so I think it's that digging deeper. And I'm not sure if I'm answering your question correctly.
That is really helpful to hear because it is that conversation that leads to the other. I think what I'm criticizing is that it's more new builds than renovations and additions, but they seem to optimize.
Oh,
they
yeah.
They say, oh, here's the setbacks.
Yep.
Here's what we're legally allowed to build. Done. Mm-hmm. And then let's design what's inside.
And then they do that.
Yes. So I'm guessing you just have people who already love their homes. And so that may
like
not
they bought
even...
this home for a reason.
Yes.
You know, and usually it's, we love the front porch or we love the woodwork or it's got these cool details that nothing else had or, and so I think they're okay building from the inside out versus like we're maximizing the space and then we're filling it in.
But that's a very different client that already loves their home versus someone who's seeking out architects. They hate their home.
Well, yeah. Usually it's like, I hate the kitchen.
Sure.
Like one person can barely turn around in here or
yeah,
the refrigerator can't open all the way. And sometimes it's just funny too, to think back and go, why did they do it this way in the beginning? Or sometimes it's just more a bad renovation. Like maybe the tiny kitchen worked to begin with, but now it's got a giant fridge and a giant range in this tiny space. And you have, so.
This is getting into a niche that I don't know if you want to dive into, but for my master's in historic preservation, my final paper was a study of the opacity of kitchens to the rest of the house. So I looked at an architect, Edwin Lundy.
Yeah.
And I looked at houses he built in the 1910s through the 1950s because there was a great record of beautiful hand drafting and full details of fireplaces and stair railings.
Lovely.
Were cataloged in the archives. So it was so fun to just have an excuse to look through all of his beautiful renderings and his artwork and,
neat.
And his drawings. So I looked at his houses and how the kitchens changed from closed off in ice boxes to being more open in the 50s. Mm-hmm. And then I compared that to the Ladies' Home Journal.
Nice.
And looked at the 1920s plans that they showed. And then there was this huge catalog in the 50s of breaking out of the kitchen. And so it was, I want a couch in my kitchen so that I can just sit down and relax sometimes. Or I want a piano in the kitchen so that my kids can play while I wash the dishes by hand after supper. And so just how tentatively people started to break those boundaries and open the kitchen up into the rest of the home as all these new appliances and devices also entered the home. So that was a really fascinating study to try and categorize and find the math. But what's the percentage of openings?
Love that.
Is it just a doorway? Is it more open? Is there a countertop that's open between this and the dining? And then also how much bigger they got in the footprint of the home.
Nice.
So yes, if you ever want to dive into that.
I do.
But what I don't know is this teenage years, because I've looked at those original designs and the 50s were some renovations. of earlier homes. But now, what are the pain points now in homes that people are, their elbows are rubbing up against different things? And what's one of the most common things that you're hearing from people about the tensions between how they want to live in this modern handheld device world and how their home is designed?
Yeah, I feel like, you know, more access for everyone to join in the fun of dishwashing and cooking. I think there's also a phrase people talk about, the one butt kitchen.
It's true. It's true. And it depends on the size of the butts.
Yeah, well, true too. But we're always like, okay, if it's this amount from counter to counter or counter to island, two people can pass through. If it's this amount, two people could stand butt to butt and work. And I think we're always looking too at, where's everybody working? This is a workspace for cutting. This is a workspace for cleaning. This is a workspace at the oven or at the range top. I also sneakily really like to maybe put a microwave low so that kids can start to cook things. You know, like, let's be independent teenagers. But also I think with the opening of the kitchen, I think we're almost to the point of too far. Like now we're more thinking about, okay, your sight line to the backyard's great. Your sight line to the dining table is good, except I don't want to see the dishes in the sink while I'm having dinner.
Yes.
So we're trying to be strategic about that. And that's probably my own idiosyncrasy. And we do ask clients that, you know, like, what do you want to see when you sit down? You know, and how accessible to the refrigerator, to the dining, like, you know, all those patterns I think make sense. And just encouraging, like, we'll call it defensible space where, okay, somebody's cooking in an L-shaped kitchen in the islands behind them. So in theory, people are hanging out at the outside of the island, your guests, and maybe there's a beverage fridge there so they can help themselves. Mm-hmm. And you're not the hostess doing all that. Like, I have a real problem with closets in the front entry. Like, I'm as a host not going to take your coat and put it in the closet. Here's a hook, you know?
Yeah.
I am not the 50s housewife. You know, I want to talk to you. I don't want to just be
the valet,
guidance counselor.
Yes.
Yeah. That's a bad one. Yeah. The maitre d', maybe.
Yes.
Yeah. I want to participate. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I like that. That's so helpful. And boy, I would love to pick your brain about how we host. We typically will do like a 20-person meal once a month or twice a month. And you know, I sometimes have to cater what we're cooking just to make sure the kitchen is not scary.
Yeah.
It works. But then also to have our home be comfortable for a family of six and then flex for that. And
yes,
it's an interesting, yeah, just how we get to design our homes to fit ourselves and fit our lives. And it's exciting to let people have power over that and just have those conversations with them.
And that's definitely common. Like, okay, every day it's a family of six and then Thanksgiving happens and you want to be able to add a table. Mm-hmm. How can we do that to your existing table? And, you know, maybe it's not as comfortable as your daily, but it can work. Or you're like, nope, I'm okay with the kids sitting at the island. So great.
And my standard is my grandparents' 1920s home that my papa built. And we fit 18 people around that table every Sunday. And no, you couldn't walk. But right. That's just what you did for 2 hours while you had lunch together. And grandma would just be closest to the kitchen and you just had to pass the food. No bathroom breaks here for this meal.
Yep. We have a banquette right now, an L-shaped banquette. And so I've been picking the corner so I can't get up and help.
Oh,
I'm stuck back here. I can't. Somebody's in front of me.
I need to switch my mentality because I'm placing myself next to the kitchen where I can be the point of contact. And it's like, no, maybe I need to be training my replacement.
Well, my husband's the cook. I'm the clean. I do clean up and some prep. So I'm just like, no, I'm just going to wait till all this craziness happens and then I'll get to work and clean up. So
I love it. Ashley, this has been a fantastic conversation. I really have loved diving into this and getting a glimpse into how you think about homes and think about spaces for people and fitting into the corners, just that, like that little house wren.
I love that. That is great. Well, I've appreciated too. This has been really fun. I like what you're doing here with this. It's going to be very helpful, I think, to other architects because we do get kind of siloed and don't look up around what are people doing. So this is great.
Thanks, Sasha.
Architecture is so multifaceted. We experience it in different dimensions of our lives, from our homes to our offices, from the plains of Nebraska to the skyscrapers of the big cities. We all experience space. And those experiences, in turn, shape the way we interpret and use buildings. In talking with Ashley, we covered so many different aspects of life and practice because as small firms and sole practitioners, the divide between living and working seems to collapse in on itself. So I'm happy to have these conversations that highlight the different ways architects elevate their own practice. Here are three things I would love to remember from this podcast. First is the importance of finding the right fit. I mentioned this already, but it's such a beautiful illustration of the design process. When a house wren is preparing the nest, the male doesn't build just one perfect space. He builds several small nests and lets the female choose the one that fits best. And Ashley uses that same process with her clients. They need to find a contractor for their residential remodel. She helps them ask deeper questions to find the right partner, not just the cheapest construction services. Because construction is challenging. You don't want to be facing these surprises with just anyone. When a plumbing vent is in the way or a structural column is exposed, we need construction partners that we can trust to work through the challenge and still complete the project. It helps if that someone also understands that their work will leave a lasting impression on your daily life in the home. And the same is true for small systems in your business, which leads to our second takeaway, infilling the small spaces. House wrens are experts at overlook spaces, nesting in gaps or corners of existing structures, places others pass by without noticing. And yet they are able to build a life from the leftover space. Ashley works on these practical challenges every day. She talks with clients about refrigerator doors not opening all the way or fitting an extra butt in the kitchen to help with the dishes. These details smooth out the flow of our daily lives. And that's great for our projects, but let's apply that same design strategy to our business. What friction do you feel in your business? Instead of cabinet drawers clashing with doors, what tasks do you do every day that compete with each other for your attention? Or do certain tasks take too long and you need someone else to help out? Every business has small gaps in the flow of professional practice. Sometimes fixing that flow will be as easy as a field report template or standardized proposals. Other times, it may be as painful as moving a central stair to gain an extra inch. Take a little time to acknowledge these pain points, because filling that gap may make all the difference in how well you can live your life within your professional practice. Because frankly, you can't be everything to everyone, which leads to our final takeaway. Fill a niche. A house wren doesn't dominate the landscape. It fits into the open gaps. It finds a niche where it can belong. Ashley's firm physically found a niche inside the International Market Square building among high-end finishes, cabinets, and designers. She is positioning her practice within the context of complementary services, and her proximity to similar businesses aids her alignment with other professionals and potential clients. Her firm is more visible to the public who walk through this building. She's very referable because people can access her services. She is building her business without showing off. She's showing up. She is present and responsive, much like the architecture she designs. Bigger isn't always better. Like fixing an awkward door swing, sometimes finding just the right fit lets everything else in life flow more naturally. Season 2 of the Flying Solo podcast is sponsored by the Minnesota Architectural Foundation, whose mission is to invest in excellence, leadership, discovery, and equity within the profession of architecture. To join the Flying Solo movement, visit the website flyingsolo.live, that's flyingsolo.live, for links to our Instagram, Substack, and the Wingbeat newsletter, a weekly dose of birdspiration and practical tips to help you grow your business and your confidence as a solopreneur architect. While you're there, take the bird quiz to discover which bird best matches your solopreneur style. For even more resources and encouragement, you can find all the Flying Solo episodes on the Gable Media platform at gablemedia.com. That's gablemedia.com, the premier destination for podcasts about architecture and design. And if you're looking for community, connection, and real conversations, check out the Entree Architect Network at entrearchitect.com. There's a link in the show notes. Whether you join one of their masterclasses or the free Facebook group, you'll find a community of small firm architects sharing ideas, challenges, and wins, proving that while we may work solo, we're never alone. As Mark R. LePage, founder of Entree Architect, says, it's all about doing better practice and better work every day. Thank you for listening to Flying Solo. I'm Katie Kangas, and my hope is to empower you, aspiring architects and creative entrepreneurs, to soar to new heights and embrace the freedom of flying solo.